You're listening to the BBC. I'm Paul Henley. This is Europe Today with news and comment from around Europe. And coming up in the next half hour of the programme, the new dispute between Britain and Iceland that they're already calling the Mackerel Wars. Are the Italian mafia clans still managing to keep lines of communication with their bosses open when the bosses are in solitary confinement in prison? And we profile the man who sang that politics kill. Manu Chao strikes a chord. That's coming up after the world news.
BBC News. At least seven tourists from Hong Kong have been killed during the hijacking of a bus in the Philippine capital, Manila. The hostage taker, a disgruntled former policeman armed with an assault rifle, was shot and killed by police after a nine-hour siege covered live on national television. Hong Kong's chief executive, Donald Zheng, said he was disappointed with the handling of the siege. The United Nations in Pakistan has described the humanitarian situation caused by the flood disaster as critical. As floodwaters continue to travel south through the country, tens of thousands of people are being displaced each day. A suicide blast at a mosque in Pakistan's tribal northwest has killed at least 20 people, including a former member of parliament. Initial reports suggest the former member of the National Assembly, Maulana Noor Mohammed, was the target of the attack. The authorities in South Sudan have accused the government of Sudan of breaking their landmark peace agreement by changing the currency in which they're paid oil revenues from US dollars to the local currency. The change deprives the South of its major source of foreign currency. The Spanish government says two kidnapped aid workers will be flown home to Spain later on Monday, following their release by Al-Qaeda militants in North Africa. The two men were abducted in Mauritania in November while delivering supplies to villagers. Rescue workers in Chile say they'll shortly be able to send the first supplies of water to 33 miners who've been trapped underground for more than 2 weeks. Mining experts have been securing a narrow tube, which is at the moment the miners' only lifeline. Doctors said getting water to the men was the main priority. A traffic jam in China stretching more than 100 kilometres has entered its ninth day. Large numbers of cars and trucks have become stranded on the National Expressway, which links the capital Beijing to Inner Mongolia. BBC News.
BBC World Service, this is Europe Today. Two Spanish aid workers kidnapped almost 9 months ago by Islamic militants in North Africa have been set free. The Spanish Prime Minister, José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero, made this announcement.
This has been 9 months of suffering for them and their families, 268 days of worry and of action from the Spanish government, which used all the political, diplomatic and intelligence means at its disposal to work for their liberation.
Roque Pascual and Albert Villalta were kidnapped when their convoy of cars was attacked in Mauritania last November while they were delivering supplies of aid to villagers. A female colleague seized with them was set free in March. José Baig, a journalist in Barcelona, where the hostages are from, has been following the men's story and he told me more about them.
They are volunteers from a local organization here in Barcelona called Barcelona Acció Solidaria. What they do, basically, they collect aid, food and money here in Barcelona and in the country, and take it to two countries in Africa, which are Senegal and Gambia. And since they've had problems in the past delivering that aid to those countries because of corruption problems or because of the safety situation in Africa, a few years ago they decided to deliver it themselves. So this is why the kidnap happened last November.
There has been speculation that a ransom has paid. What's been said?
The Spanish media are quoting sources from the Arab language media in Africa, and there are actually very different figures, but they're saying that something between 5 and 10 million euros were paid through a mediator to the organization to get these two aid workers free today.
And what does the charity that the...
Yeah, you're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, 250 watts of community power.
Come one, come all, and check out on the Shelf, your friendly neighborhood queer library and resource center. Out on the Shelf can provide you with over 2,000 book titles of special interest to your needs or your curiosities. We also have a countless variety of magazines, movie titles, pamphlets, and many other queer and trans resources available for you and the community. So come on in and visit us at Out on the Shelf, located at 141 Woolwich Street at the base of the Matrix building on the corner of Aramasa, and meet some of our many volunteers who work hard to keep our space safe and confidential. Help yourself to a cup of tea, browse the shelves, or kick up your feet and crack open one of your favorite books. To find out our hours and learn more on Out on the Shelf, please check out outontheshelf.ca or give us a call at 519-515-0691.
Eclectic Radio. Eclectic Radio is Theremin to Ableton, Tech House to Stockhausen, Electroacoustic to Electroclash, any and everything that is electronic music. Heard live to air every other Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. on CFRU 93.3 FM, or find streaming and archives at CFRU.ca. Eclectic Radio.
CJAM, the station that turns the
power on.
Welcome to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Today I'm going to be chatting with Anthony Tussler from AboutDisability.com. So tell me a little about AboutDisability.com.
It's been 10 years now. I stopped working for anyone else and started working for myself, and in that process, tried to figure out what was I going to do? What was important to me? What was kind of the core of what I could bring to the disability community and the larger community about disability issues. And doing one of those web searches, trying to find out a website name that somebody else hadn't already scooped up, I came across About Disability. It made a lot of sense to me. And that what I tend to do well is be able to explain disability, both to the disability community. Explaining disability, meaning explaining the disability experience and what it means in a larger context, both to the disability and to the larger community. So About Disability made a lot of sense to me for a website name. What it's turned out to be is a place for me to... I have a lot of interest, three or four main ones, and the website gives me a place to be able to disseminate information and let people know some of the work that I'm doing and the things that might be of value to them.
Can you tell me a little about the work that you are doing?
Right now, the thing that's getting me most excited and where I'm really putting a lot of energy is in the intersection between disability and music. There is a huge number of people with disabilities who are creating music in the mainstream, and it's not particularly well known that they have disabilities. So I've been finding out that information just through my music, reading about, finding out in my reading about music. I enjoy music writing. There's a couple of publications, the best music writing of each year. And I read those with interest, and disability will be mentioned in them. And no one seems to be paying attention but me. So I've been collecting this data for quite a while now.
And in your search, have you run across much material specifically on disabilities, not just artists with disabilities, but their song topics?
Well, that's interesting. I originally came to this because for decades I'd been saving songs that I came across that related to disability. Probably the best known to most people is, even though it's a little bit old now, is Ruby Don't Take Your Love to Town. It was a huge hit for Kenny Rogers. It was written by Mel Tillis, who's a man with a severe stutter, interestingly. And it's the story of a Vietnam vet who is lying in his bed listening to his wife or girlfriend go off to town and to the bars and hang out with other guys. And the refrain, "Ruby, I know it's hard to love a man whose legs are bent and paralyzed." A lot of people with disabilities know. And so I thought, well, if there's this one, there must be more out there. And I knew a few country songs that were about disability. And so I started really doing a conscious search. And surprisingly, there aren't that many that explicitly talk about disability. I mean, there's another one that was a huge hit during World War II that's hardly known right now. And that's There's a Star-Spangled Banner Waving Somewhere by Elton Britt. And the storyline essentially is a disabled kid from the mountains is saying, "Uncle Sam, won't you take a crippled boy like me?" But Ruby and Star-Spangled Banner Waving Somewhere are really the two only ones that I found that are really explicitly about disability. And that's what led me into finding artists who became artists because of their disabilities. Some of those are people like Doc Watson, who is a folk singer and an amazing guitar player who's blind. And he said on an American interview show that if he hadn't been blind, he would have become an engineer. And as I've said a couple of times, I can't imagine anything that Doc Watson would have done as an engineer that would have been so important in my life as the music he's created. Others, Frank Zappa is one, and Marilyn Manson is another, and two very different kinds of music, but both of them, in their adolescence, had experiences being in the hospital, being treated as someone with a disability, being treated, as they say in the academic field, as the other. And I believe, and Zappa said so, that that experience has led them to be able to see what it's like to be a disabled person, someone outside the mainstream, someone who is not a part of everyday life in the same kind of way that people who are seen as able-bodied are. So Frank Zappa said that after his experiences, he saw himself as an anthropologist. And Marilyn Manson, I believe, his music is so satiric, I believe that it is, this experience of being the other, of being the outsider, of being the disabled person, led him to be able to do the critique of society that he does implicitly in his songs and in his stage act.
And what inspired you to begin your search?
Two things, really. One is coming across Ruby Don't Take Your Love to Town. The other one is just being a disabled person who loves music. You know, I'm one of those people, I joke that I don't play any instruments. I play the radio. But music, yeah, I'm 63 years old. I'm part of that generation that music was very important to us, whether it was the rock and roll of the 50s when we were the first generation to really have a music that was only our own. Through the 60s with the protest music and the rebirth of the folk music, music has really been a thread throughout my generation's life and my life in particular.
If you don't mind my asking, what's the nature of your disability?
I have a spinal cord injury that I got when I was 5 years old. And so I used both wheelchairs and braces and crutches for the past, 58 years now. And so I've seen tremendous changes in how society has viewed disability, not only viewed, but how society has treated people with disability. When I was injured when I was in kindergarten, and I was 5 years old. I was able to come back to the same school that I had been going to for kindergarten to attend the first grade. I was injured in October, so it was 11 months later. And for the first 3 years of my elementary school, I was very fortunate in that I lived a block away from the school, and there was level access into the building, into the ground floor. So in a wheelchair, I could get into the building without any problem. The first 3 years, I was able to go to school just like anybody else, go out in the playground, all those things. The fourth grade and fifth grade classes were on the second floor. There were no elevators in this building. It didn't occur to anyone, not me, not my teacher, not my parents, not the principal, not the school district, to move the fourth grade class down to the ground floor when I needed to go to that class. It was my job to be able to either use braces and crutches, climb the stairs, and go to the fourth grade, or have a substandard education going to special school. So really, essentially, what I did for those 3 years was learn how to use braces and crutches and build up my body in a way that I could climb those stairs, which I did. And so that really, up until Section 504 of the 1973 Rehabilitation Act here in the United States was passed, it was enacted into law in 1977. But really, until that point, and the disability rights movement started in the early 1970s here in this country, up until the point of those two things, I knew that if I wanted to do anything, I had to figure out a way to do it, that nobody was going to change where the classroom was, change anything in the built environment to make it easier for me to get there. If I was able to figure out a way to do it on my own, I could probably get in. But if I needed any accommodation, I wouldn't be able to do it. And so that change is profound, and that's really what has changed the world. The example I use is, as I was growing up, what the common wisdom said was the way for me to get into a building with stairs was for me to either use braces and crutches, as I did, or design a wheelchair that could climb stairs. After the disability rights movement, the solution was to build a ramp instead of focusing on me as an individual, focusing on the institution, on what the built environment could do. And once a ramp was built, probably for not much more than what braces would cost, crutches would cost me, if they're individually fitted, done by doctors, and it's expensive, once a ramp is put in, it can be used by me and many other people with disabilities, but including people who are pushing wheeled carts, people with baby carriages, people who just don't like to climb stairs, all kinds of people were then able to get into the building easily. That's the profound change that I've seen in my lifetime, and it's just amazing that that's happened.
That brings up another interesting point about something I've always said. Say you have a facility in a basement and there's an elevator. In the event there's no power to the elevator, something like a portable ramp or something of the like can allow a person with a disability to still gain access. It's just a point I wanted to bring up.
Right. Once we get into the specific, it then becomes... What I have found is that we have general principles in the U.S. We've got the Americans with Disabilities Act, and many of the states have laws, building codes require access, not to housing, interestingly enough, particularly single-family dwellings, but in general, a lot of laws. But once you start talking about individual environments, then you have to tailor it to both the people using it as well as that individual building. So I would agree with you in many instances, but there are other instances where there might be other solutions that might work better. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's unlike other civil rights issues in that there is this individual component that usually when we're looking at the rights for women, African Americans, African Canadians, Latinos, doesn't apply in quite the same way. It's that individual accommodation that really is the difference between our civil rights and other civil rights. And there's been some exploration of that, but not as much as I'd like to see, because I think it's fascinating, because it really means a different way of looking at huge chunks of society.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure. Hey, I'm glad. Thank you very much, Cam.
Of course. Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
They told me that I was lazy, that I'd never amount to anything. Everything was confusing and frustrating. Then I found out I had a learning disability, that there are solutions and people who can help.
The Learning Disabilities Association of Canada is dedicated to helping people with learning disabilities achieve their true potential in school, in the workplace, and in society. Visit our website at ldac.ca. This message from the Learning Disabilities Association of Canada and this station.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Anthony Tussler, founder of AboutDisability.com. He gave us a remarkable look at the changes in the way society views individuals with disabilities over the years. It's really interesting to me, folks, to hear about the ways things have improved for individuals with disabilities in terms of things like mobility, transportation, accessibility of buildings. So things have really improved over time, and Anthony gave us a remarkable insight into what it was like watching this change. For this week's song, I'm going to play Whatever Gets You Through by Peter Cetera.
now, can't you see? That's life. Take a look around you now. Some days you shine, some days it all unwinds. Never let them rain on you. And soon they fall. Then after all, whatever gets you through, it takes whatever gets you through. Believe whatever gets you through. You're
that was Whatever Gets You Through by Peter Cetera. Now, here at the station, we love to hear what gets you through. If you're a person with a disability,